Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you the conversation shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons downtown. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to be part of the conversation? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, four Ohio mayors share the CMC stage for a historic conversation on how cities are driving the Buckeye State's growth through innovation, investment, and community leadership. This week's panelists represent over 1 million Ohioans. Columbus Mayor Andrew J. Genther, Findlay Mayor Christina Murren, Lima Mayor Sherita Smith, and Toledo Mayor Wade Kapsikavich. Your host is Stacia Nock-In, news anchor with WBNS 10 TV. Let's join this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Urban Power, How Cities Are Driving Ohio's Growth.
We're all so glad that you are here for this discussion. And how about a round of applause for this beautiful new official home for the Columbus Metropolitan Club? And looking especially festive today as well. We're so glad that you are here for this very important conversation. And we want to just jump right in. When we talk about growth, and I know each of the cities that we are highlighting today have experienced tremendous growth. And one of the words that you hear, I think most often when we speak about growth, particularly in Ohio, you hear about the word collaboration. So I want to open up the floor to all four of our mayors today. How can Ohio's cities work together rather than compete? How can we collaborate for talent, investment, national visibility? How do we find that balance as we continue growing our urban centers?
All right, I guess the group looked at me, so I get to start. Well, thank you for having us. And you know what? One of the ways that Ohio cities are really collaborating is better telling Ohio's story, right? For years, we have seen, you know, we'll talk to people and say, oh, well, Ohio's kind of a flyover state. But when you talk about selling your community and telling the Ohio story, I think that really starts to intrigue people, not just from a business perspective of being a great place to invest, but also from what our cities have to offer, right? If you're looking for a large metropolitan, you may be looking more at are the three C's. If you're looking for more rural communities that have that small town feel, then Lima and Findlay and other rural communities across the state. And Toledo provides such a great juxtaposition of both with more urban setting, but also the kind of rural communities around it. So I think that's one way. And then obviously we are really working together for policy advocacy through the Ohio Mayors Alliance, which is also celebrating our 10th year next year. But really being able to make sure that we're getting that message out there and making sure that Ohio cities are recognized for the valuable asset that they are, both at home and around the world.
I think there are a number of different ways we can answer this question, but I think fundamentally it comes back to playing to your strengths. And every city is a little different. Every city has strengths, and other than Columbus, every city has weaknesses. I'm playing to the crowd here. So when we have, first of all, we've been very successful in the Toledo area. For 8 out of the last 11 years, we've finished in the top 10 in the nation in terms of new business investment, not top 10 in Ohio or top 10 in our zip code, but top 10 in the nation. I think part of what we have tried to do is look at what Toledo is strong in and maybe what we're weak. So let me just jump to what I'm talking about. We don't have a lot of space in Toledo. You know, we're a 200-year-old city. We're landlocked. I think if we got really creative, we might be able to stumble upon 200 contiguous acres for a large project. But nowadays, as certainly the folks in this region know, these mega sites, you know, they looked on the bridge of their nose at 200 acres. Now they need 1,000 acres, 1,200 acres. We don't have that. Our suburban partners do. But what our suburban partners don't have that we have is water. You know, we're located, from my office, I look out and 1/5 of all the fresh water on planet Earth. That's what the Great Lakes are. 20% of all the uncapped fresh water on our planet is in our backyard, and that will continue to be the greatest advantage that this region has as we look forward over the next 100 years or so. So we have created tax sharing zones and agreements with our suburban partners. So there's a huge economic development project that is happening in a city called Rossford up in our neck of the woods. They had all, you know, what had been soybean fields, plenty of land. They didn't have any water. We didn't have the land. We had the water. Now, because of a project that isn't even located anywhere in the city of Toledo, it's, you know, as the crow flies, maybe 8 miles outside of the city, we get about $1.5 million a year in income tax every year because of the, you know, 40-year contractual relationship that we put together with that suburb. I think that is how we have to think creatively as we go forward, unless you are just embarrassingly successful like Columbus, who gets everything and wins everything and is exploding in growth. If you're not Columbus, you have to be creative, and that's what we've done in Toledo.
Mayor Smith.
No, I said he keeps picking on Columbus, but you look great, no, Mayor Ginther. No, first, just an honor to be here with so many colleagues that I respect. But one of the things that I've learned, you know, with almost 10 years inside City Hall, 5 as chief of staff, and now in my second term as mayor, is that cities don't grow in isolation. We have to collaborate and connect. And specifically for Lima, you know, we sit at the intersection of these cities that I'm on the stage with. We're right where I-75 and US 30 meets. And so what that means is from a logistics standpoint, from a workforce standpoint, you know, we connect a lot of the materials and people to a lot of the jobs and employers that are in these cities. We are also the urban area surrounded by agricultural in a 10-county region in Northwest Ohio. So similar to Toledo, we provide water. Our population in our city is 35,000, but we have over 70,000 water customers. And because of the ability to provide water, we have $30 million gallon a day water treatment plant, 15 billion gallons of water in our reservoirs, and we've been able to attract big data centers in our area as well because of that asset helping to drive economic growth.
Mayor Ginther.
Well, who knew that Caps Kavich would be the eye candy of this panel up here today, but or at least he's claiming. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me back. Was just here a couple of months ago to talk about the Columbus bond package. So all the Columbus voters in the room, thank you, thank you, thank you. We made the biggest commitment and investment in housing in our city's history, overwhelming support for our bond efforts, including a fourth water plant, which, as you've heard, is a pretty important part of our region's growth and our future. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I think what you've heard from my colleagues here is that we're not just the mayors of our cities, we're really the mayors of our regions. And the cities and regions that are winning in Ohio, in America, and I would argue the world, are ones that are acting regionally. You know, coming together, collaborating, cooperating. We're not looking to be in hand-to-hand combat with our suburban and exurban neighbors. That's a zero-sum scarcity mindset. That's not what mayors do. We're all about growing our communities, growing our regions, growing in population, continuing to create more jobs. And when you look at the state of Ohio, the past, the present, and the future of Ohio runs through Ohio cities. You know, when you take a look at GDP, job creation, economic opportunity, prosperity, it runs through Ohio cities. But it's really, really important that we continue to not just be leaders of our cities, but of our regions. And as you've heard, whether it's water, sewer, other types of things, workforce development, education, that we're thinking about how to grow our regions as opposed to looking just within our city limits.
Mayor Ginther, I want to continue with you because Mayor Kapsakavich reminded me of something I just read in Governing's Fall 2025 magazine. And the quote says, despite its apparent lack of advantages, which was kind of rude, Columbus has emerged as one of the great American success stories of the 21st century. So when you think of something like that, what's the hardest part about managing such quick growth while maintaining equity for all?
It's the biggest challenge facing our community. You know, how do we make sure that everybody benefits from our growth and success? Folks that were born and raised here and folks that came here yesterday to enroll at a university or community college or take a job with one of our great employers. And so what we're really focused on is making sure that safety, housing, and transit remain our top priorities as we fight hard to make sure that Columbus is affordable for everybody. We believe passionately, if you work in this community, you should be able to afford to live here. And we think it's critically important, particularly for the folks that make our city go, our bus drivers, our teachers, the folks that are teaching our children and helping to care for our parents, the folks that are police officers, our firefighters. We want them to live closer to the communities they serve. And so housing and this issue we passed this fall, updating our zoning code for the first time in 70 years, entering into more public-private partnerships to expand affordability is going to be absolutely critical. And I'm excited about what we're going to do with this regional housing coalition, because our goal is to get 200,000 units in the pipeline in the next 10 years so we can be competitive, affordable, and accessible.
And I know that's a balancing act for all of you with your communities. Mayor Kapsakavich, you have turned a deficit into a substantial surplus. Post-pandemic, $49.5 million left in the rainy day fund for your budget that you are currently working on. How do you attack financial stability in that way, and what's something you're still working on for your community?
The fact that you quoted that stat just shows what a good job I do manipulating the narrative coming out of Toledo. That is true. That is true. Just don't look at what our budget estimates are 4 years from now, because they might not be the same. No, it. I think the city of Toledo had not received a upgrade in its bond rating in 14 years before last year. And last year, I assume all of us or a lot of us have to make the trip to New York or Chicago once a year to meet with the bonding agency. So last year, we got our first upgrade in 14 years. This past year, we got another one. So it's two straight years that we had our bond rating upgraded. We have the highest rating we've had since 1980, only two other times in our city's history, in 1953 and 1967, have we ever had a higher bond rating. That means that we are managing our money well. It doesn't mean that we have enough money. It's the opposite side of the same coin. We are doing, as according to the geniuses on Wall Street, we're doing as good a job as we ever have in Toledo of managing our two nickels. I wish we had eight nickels. And that is the challenge that I think cities face, at least ours. You know, the Jeep is a big deal in Toledo. We don't just make the Jeep. We actually invented it. It was a military vehicle invented in 1940. They didn't even know what to call it. The War Department called it a general purpose vehicle when they sent out the RFP. GM, Ford, all the big boys bid on it, but it was the little adorable Willys Overland Company from Toledo, Ohio, that won the contract for the general purpose vehicle. You say GP fast enough, it turns into Jeep. We're proud of it. We've never not made it. We just got news that Stellantis is going to bring 900 more jobs to our plant by 27. That's great news. That's about $1.2 million in income tax revenue. In order for us to sort of grow our way out of our economic challenges, which we estimate to be somewhere around $50 million, we don't need 900 more jobs at Jeep. We would need 30,000 more. So the Jeep plant that we have right now, we'd need six more of them. If you understand the challenge in those terms, it really does speak to the need that we have to, you talk about partners, we need partners across the street at the legislature if we're going to continue to grow the state's economy. Andy's right, you want to put numbers to it, 90% of the GDP of the state of Ohio is produced in its seven largest cities, just in the top seven cities. So Parma and up generates
90% of the GDP of the state, 71% of all the jobs, 76% of all the economic. We need to be able to have a partner across the street if we're going to be able to continue to do these things. We're excited that we're getting 900 new Jeep jobs. We need 30,000 of them to be in the clear financially.
Mayor Smith, I know you spoke briefly about the importance of mid-sized cities, partnering accessibility to the larger metropolitan areas as well. So for you, with Lima, how do you feel Lima contributes to the overall success of Ohio while focused on Lima as well?
Yeah, so I think for us, just in context, we have a Procter & Gamble plant. It's the world's largest producer of the fabric scent beads as well as the fabric softener. We have General Dynamics, which is the only producer of the A1 Abrams tank. We have the oldest oil refinery in Ohio and two of the largest hospitals in the 10-county region. And for us, again, it is that transportation and logistics, but also, you know, because we are so small, we can be nimble and a lot of different ideas can be tested in our city that can be duplicated other places. So one of our biggest successes in growing our economy is really starting small and looking at young people. We have a signature program that we call Gen Next, where we, you know, don't just do an internship program where we're out sitting kids anywhere. We start with young people by asking them, what are their hopes? What do they want to be when they grow up? But we're really trying to show them that you can do that right here and at home. And one of our biggest successes that we've had over the years is really two. We had a young man who wanted to be in media and radio. And you think, you know, a place like Lima, Ohio, how do you get into media? But this young man had an opportunity to produce and write his own commercial. And imagine hearing yourself on the radio on your way to school in the morning. And so now he knows he has a future here in our community. We had another young lady that started an internship with one of our hospitals who now has a full-time job. And so I think we all, with the exception of Columbus, have struggled with how to keep young people in your community. And so we're doing that hard work in Lima by starting early. You talked about equity earlier, Mayor Ginther, and one of the key things for equity is belonging. People have to see themselves and their future in your community. And as mayors, anytime we can do that, that's a great way to grow.
And sometimes I know that growth can take you well across the world, because I know, Mayor Murren, you just visited Japan recently with the Hancock County delegation. What did you learn from that experience that can contribute to the Findlay formula?
Yes, so Japan has been a key partner in the Findlay-Hancock County growth over the last three decades. We have seven Japanese businesses located in Hancock County, primarily related to the auto industry, and 13 in the Northwest Ohio region. And when we talk about the Findlay formula, it's really about business, education, and government working together to solve community challenges. And that's really how we approach everything. So whether it is looking at how we continue to attract and retain a strong workforce, how we work on housing development, which is, I know, a key issue for all of us up here, and how do we sell our community? Part of our identity in Findlay is being kind of an international community. And you may not think of that when you think of Northwest Ohio, but we have, companies from nine different international countries and lots of students from the University of Findlay that are coming and experiencing it. And Japan has been our most notable relationship, but I think continuing to look for ways to celebrate that and to show those opportunities and to partner with businesses is really important. As you know, many times when I am overseas talking, whether it's Japan or Israel or Qatar, being able to be in those countries and say, listen, we have great communities across the country, not just the coast, right? Not just LA or New York or Chicago or Columbus, but also if you come to these other communities, you may find something that's really special that you can call home. And it makes me really happy to see. I'll just give a plug. If you're ever in Japan, our brewing is actually a brewery over in Japan that was started based off of Findlay Brewing Company. When those students came on an exchange, they experienced Findlay Brewing and they decided that they wanted to open a place like that of their own and started a microbrewery that is now a restaurant and a community spot. It's somewhere where they want to be like, that's our brewery.
I know there are a lot of similar challenges in each community. Despite the difference in sizes, we know that homelessness continues to be a growing issue in not just the major metropolitan areas at this point. And we know Ohio relies on federal funds for a majority of its permanent housing beds for those experiencing homelessness, according to the National Alliance to End Homelessness. So with HUD's policy change that we just heard about last week for the local assistance programs, we know that 10,000 Ohioans could return to homelessness. How are you preparing your cities for this reality? And how can we find solutions?
Yeah, so like you said, this is an issue that hits all of our communities, and Findlay is no exception. So you know, a lot of it comes back to advocacy, talking to our national partners. I know all of us are part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which has been advocating with Congress, explaining the ripple effect that we would feel. Yesterday, I had a call with Secretary Turner talking about, hey, one of the biggest things that I think local communities are experiencing is just complete uncertainty. And I think it's not, I guess it's not just local governments, it's everybody everywhere, just a lot of changing dynamics. And so the big message is, listen, we're willing to work with you to look at how systems can be improved or how things can be changed. But you can't just pull the rug out from under the systems, because that's going to have a huge cascading negative impact on our communities. So right now what I've been doing, again, much smaller, so it gives us that flexibility, is, okay, what does that local impact look like? What are potential stop gaps? But the reality is that the funding that we have been receiving and investing in our community, it would be a catastrophic hole for us to try to fill. Like, we could call every donor in our community, and the reality is it would be very challenging us to fill that funding gap and to have the, in Hancock County, our housing capacity, we're at 99% occupancy. Our homeless shelter and emergency shelter is completely full. And we last year opened a low barrier shelter to get people just off the street for sleeping. So they can't necessarily stay there all day long because they're not engaging in all of the services required, but we just want to get them not sleeping on the streets. And so I think for us, we are just trying to raise the alarm and say, pause, let's work together. And hopefully Congress recognizes that, but I think we still have a lot of work to do on this issue.
Anyone else want to speak to this particular issue?
The city of Toledo has not only lost the federal funds that you are referring to, we lost $30 million called a RAISE grant, which is a grant that would have provided sort of traffic safety in the east part of our city. Another one of our large employers, Libby Glass, we're the Glass City. It was a $40 million Department of Energy grant that would have allowed them to install more energy efficient furnaces. But now we don't believe in global warming anymore, or global warming doesn't exist, or some silliness. So that's gone. So it's about $100 million. And I suppose you talk about that as if it's a bad thing. Elon Musk needed a tax break. And so if the cost of Elon Musk getting a tax break and blowing the federal budget to cause the deficit to actually increase is a few homeless people going hungry, so much the better. Don't you feel great as an American already? Or is that just me?
To add to that, I think that these decisions, and as Mayor Capsicabbage has talked about, that's only one decision that is affecting communities all across the country. But when we think about these decisions, we can't think about them about how they're affecting communities. They are affecting people. I have friends that are teachers, young kids that are afraid to go to school because of, what's happening in terms of immigration. But to bring it back to the housing issue, the funding that we received was never enough to meet the need in the first place. So it's now even worse. which forces us to look for other partners. We've had a need for more project-based vouchers for decades. And you have developers that come into your community and they want to build affordable housing, but we also have to understand that these projects have to make financial sense. And if there is no operating costs to run the shelters with the transitional care and other ancillary services that individuals need, because it's not just a housing issue that we're trying to solve, it's also a social issue where people need access to services as well. We need, this is also, it forces us, as has been stated, to have deeper conversations with our legislatures across the street. Because if the federal government is not going to help, then we have to do it here for ourselves here in Ohio and provide the resources to house individuals. Because we'll see the effect. We either pay for it on the front end with housing, or we pay for it on the back end in our judicial systems and other systems as well.
Yeah, I think Mayor Smith makes a great point. And when you think about it, most experts say that based on what we've seen and what's coming down the path, this could be the greatest retreat of the federal government's investment in local government, cities and counties, since World War II. Just think about that for a second. And the position mayors and local leaders are going to be put in is to partner with the private sector, with other governments, to try to deliver as much as possible. We saw this with the government shutdown and SNAP benefits and the long lines at food banks and food pantries throughout our communities. This issue is just going to continue to compound. I was at a warming center at a church on the Near East Side yesterday. We were able to invest an additional $2 million into warming centers in each part of the community where folks can go during the day and some spend the night. Because our shelters are full and in some cases have waiting lists. And we know that one of the ways that we continue to lead on this is figuring out new partnerships and new collaborations. But we'll be the first ones to tell you there's no one coming to save us on the local level. We're going to have to invest in ourselves, which luckily our voters did through this bond package this fall. We're going to have to continue to create jobs, get more efficient and more effective with offering basic city services. But you're going to have a lot of local leaders in the next couple of years making some very, very tough decisions based on the federal government's retreat and dysfunction and lack of partnership in the legislature. But I think what you're going to hear today from us is we're really bullish about Ohio's future. And we want to help lead one of the greatest population growths in our state's history. Mayors and cities can do that. We just need partners at the state and federal level to help us do that. I mean, I don't know about you, but the fact we have less money coming to our state, that we have fewer members of Congress to advocate on our behalf because our population continues to decline, that's not good for us. That's not good for Ohio cities. That's not good for Ohio's rural communities. We need to be in a growth mindset. And the mayors of this state, in a bipartisan way, are committed to leading on it.
You are listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, four Ohio mayors share the CMC stage for a historic conversation on how cities are driving the Buckeye State's growth through innovation, investment, and community leadership. Our panelists this week represent over 1 million Ohioans. Columbus Mayor Andrew J. Genther, Findlay Mayor Christina Murren, Lima Mayor Sherita Smith, and Toledo Mayor Wade Kapsikavich. Your host is Stacia Nakien, news anchor with WBNS 10 TV. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Urban Power, How Cities Are Driving Ohio's Growth, after a short break.
Hi, I'm Raghav Raj. I'm the student intern here at 90.5 WCBE. Did you know that you can tune into this show on WCBE's new app? Whether you're on the go or staying home, the WCBE app lets you listen to our programming online anytime. For local music, community news, and original podcasts, find WCBE on the App Store or the Google Play Store today.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Columbia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, four Ohio mayors share the CMC stage for a historic conversation on how cities are driving the Buckeye State's growth through innovation, investment, and community leadership. Our panelists this week represent over 1 million Ohioans: Columbus Mayor Andrew J. Genther, Findlay Mayor Christina Murren, Lima Mayor Sherita Smith, and Toledo Mayor Wade Kapsikavich. Your host is Stacia Nakien, news anchor with WBNS 10 TV. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Urban Power, How Cities Are Driving Ohio's Growth.
If I could just add in there too, last week, you know, I don't know if we're digging into this, hopefully we're not, just because I don't think any of us want to talk about it more than we have to, is the property tax reform and the petition initiative and the catastrophic impact that that would have on our state. But I think that it goes back to a question that I think we're all asking is, Ohio is in a position right now where we have to decide what we want our future to look like. Do we just want to be the lowest tax state? Or do we want to be the state that is growing and thriving and that people want to be? Now, I think that there's obviously, you want to be fiscally responsible, you want to have a low tax environment as much as possible, but it takes money to do good things. And if we want to be that growing, thriving state, you know, cities are leading the charge, but we have to make a decision that that's what we want to be and be able to continue to invest in our communities, because Ohio can't just be a place that, oh yeah, well, there's good jobs, but I don't really want to live there because it doesn't have the quality of life that I want, or the housing type that I want, or it has policies that make me feel unwelcome. And I think that that is what, you know, mayors every day, we say we're in charge of making our communities great and trying to do those things locally. But if we're not looking at that as our opportunity at the state level as well, then it's going to be really challenging to really achieve that.
What, 88 counties in Ohio. 70 of them are losing population, 12 are plateauing, 6 are growing. We can change that. And mayors are committed to lead on that, but it takes partnership.
Well, one of the worst things about politics is that there's such an emphasis put on the soundbite, the one sentence, you know, the 15 second snippet on the news. And so it is very attractive and garners a lot of positive head nodding if you walked into a room and said, who wants to eliminate property tax? Who wants to eliminate taxes? Rawr! Okay, well, that's great. That's not even a paragraph, that's a sentence. What's the next sentence in that paragraph?
what's the, you know, what are the 10 words after that? Benjamin Franklin was right. The only certainties in life are death and taxes, and people prefer death to taxes. So great, we can get rid of all the property taxes. How are we paying for police? You don't want police? What about firefighters? You know, it sounds great, but we just need to be a little more thoughtful.
It is CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. So we're going to move to questions from our live stream and in-person audiences in just a few minutes. So if you have a question, please make your way over to the microphone right here where Doug is. If you are joining us on YouTube, please type your questions into the chat. And before we take those audience questions, so I have one more question for our mayors here. When we focus on lifelong learning, because I'm sure you learn something new in your roles every single day, and making adjustments, can you give us an example of a time when a program, an initiative, didn't work out the way you'd hoped? How did you pivot, and what did you learn from that experience?
I think one of the things, and I think I've been the mayor the least amount of time on this panel, so yeah. I think one of the things that I've learned is the importance of making those early investments soon that no one cares about. And I'll focus on like housing. And so for us, yes, you want to get the developer to come in and build the units. But before that, you have to invest the dollars and resources to clear the site for demolition. Look at your zoning codes, to change your zoning codes, assemble those parcels. And so for me, I would say, you know, and biblically, you know, don't despise the small beginnings, but do that early work ahead of time, so therefore you're prepared when the opportunity comes. And that's something that is happening, you know, for Lima, because we've been doing that work, assembling parcels, looking at our zoning code, even getting down to the municipal things in city government and looking at how does our building department operate? Are we moving quickly enough? Are our tax incentives enough to actually entice a project? Those are paying off. We have developers that are calling our Department of Housing and Neighborhoods every day. We have a 80-plus senior housing unit that's going to come into our community next year. And we've also been able to attract a $25 million opportunity zone investment that is specifically going to be focused on housing. But it is because we did that early work in the beginning to be prepared to attract those investments.
Anybody else want to speak to an example?
I don't have a specific example, and this is a really, probably you guys are going to laugh at me literally and figuratively, in that I can't think of a thing that we really, like an initiative that we failed at or something we failed at, because I think as mayors, we are constantly living the Friends episode yelling pivot, because like failure is not really an option. You just have to like keep rolling with the punches and pivot until you get to some sort of result. And so I don't feel like I live in this idea of like, oh, well, we failed on that. It's a, okay, that came out differently than I was anticipating, but we got something done.
So is it only Toledo that fails at things? That's what I'm...
Finley doesn't fail.
Christine,
yeah, does not fail.
Christine talks about Friends, an episode of Friends. Her answer reminded me of an episode of The Simpsons where Homer is applying for a job with two other folks. And the question is, what are your, you know, what are your faults? And the other two are like, oh, I work too hard. I care too much. I just, you know, I'm such a perfectionist. And Homer's the only one dumb enough to answer it honestly. I'm stupid, I'm lazy. So Christine's answer is like, we make no mistakes. You know. Meanwhile, I have plenty. Like, I can explain all, you know, if my wife were here, she could give you 20 more. I would say of the, you know, look, we're human, and there are, you know, things that we have done that have, I can think of my first year as mayor, we thought we had a better way to collect leaves than they had been doing. There's actually we tried a sort of a gun buyback, totally different subject, but same thing. We thought we knew how to do it. Both of those they're working better now. The first year there were still leaves on the street in February that weren't collected. What we did is we listened. We actually listened to the workers, the streets, bridges, and harbor workers who collect the leaves, and they say, hey, idiots, you know, do it this, this, and this. And we have had every leaf collected by the end of December ever since. And so I think if there's a lesson there, But it's to be humble and realize that maybe you don't have all the answers and listen to the real experts, whether they are the folks who are, you know, the men and women who are really collecting those leaves or whether it's the folks. When you listen to the real stakeholders, you'll be surprised how obvious the answers can be.
Mayor Ginther, any thoughts?
Well, Columbus would just tell Toledo to hold my beer. So one of the biggest mistakes and course corrections I've had to do as mayor, I thought I had a leadership challenge and issue at the Columbus Division of Police. Turned out I had a cultural issue and challenge. By making that mistake, but also doing the course correction with the community, we brought in the first chief of police from outside the division in the city's history. As you can imagine, there wasn't consensual support, unanimous support for that in the community. Chief Bryant has been an incredible leader, and the police and the community are working closer together than ever before. We put in place a civilian review board, an inspector general, but we also have funded the police in ways that we have never done before. And right now, because of our comprehensive strategy and the chief's leadership, we have the lowest number of homicides and violent crime in our city since 2007. So I would say that people don't expect us to be perfect, but when we make mistakes, we acknowledge them, and we own the remedy and course correction to improve. People will only punish us as leaders if we stop trying or we don't accept responsibility.
Thank you all so much for your honesty on that question in particular. We want to get to Doug now with CMC, who's curating questions from our live stream, and for those of you here in person as well, joining Doug over at the microphone. So, Doug, what is our first question?
Stacia, thank you so much, and thank you so much to all the mayors for joining us. If you do have a question, please join us here at the microphone. We'll try to get to as many questions as we can. If you're watching us online, please do type your questions into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can. As always, great questions at CMC can be asked in just a sentence or two, and a question should always end with a certain punctuation point, a certain punctuation mark. Dr. Bill, what punctuation mark does a question end with?
It is a question mark.
It ends with a question mark. He's a repeat customer. Thank you. Here's one to start us off. Immigration helps Ohio grow, but it also can raise safety and economic considerations in some communities. How do you see cities balancing, protecting communities, addressing those concerns with the economic benefits that immigrants bring to Ohio?
Yeah, so immigration is obviously a very complex topic, and I think each of our communities has to manage it a little bit differently based off of what type of immigrant populations you're coming into the community, how they are assimilating, how they are engaging with the community as a whole. So in Findlay, over the past 3 years, we had seen an increase in Haitian immigrants on temporary protected status coming into our community. And identifying them as temporary protected status is really important because one of the benefits that that allows them is the ability to work immediately. There are a variety of visa types or status that do not allow them to work. So our biggest challenge was, one, helping our landlords and different housing facilities educate the immigrants on how to live effectively in those environments, because sometimes the housing, cooking methods, different things like that caused damage to the house and also attract rodents. So being able to educate, helping do English language classes and get people connected to be able to communicate, and then working with our community to help them understand what is the population, why are they in our community, and how they can engage with our immigrant population in a positive way. Now, it certainly was challenging. There was a lot of negative rhetoric that came with that. But I think that just being honest with our community about here's who is in our community, here's how they ended up here, here are their stories. We worked with our community foundation and a couple of other nonprofits to tell the stories of some of the immigrants that were in our community, and helping just, again, see people as humans and help take away some of the misinformation that was being spun around the country and in our community itself, helped take some of that air out of the hot air balloon.
Hi, I'm Bill Lafayette. I am an economist. I own Regionomics here in town. Data centers have been popping up all over the place like toadstools in April. And I'm just curious to hear what y'all think about data centers now and in the future.
This is a hot topic. It certainly is in up in our part of the state, and my sense is it is everywhere. I am still forming, I think, my opinion on data centers. But among the thoughts in my garbled, word salad brain are these thoughts. At some point, the world has changed, and it's not going to change back. No one's building typewriters anymore. If I was in the horse and buggy business, when the automobile came around, I either had to change or I'd be out, I don't think we're not going to continue to buy these things or my business cards. And so the stuff that's being produced at data centers feed our addiction to the iPhone 17, or they're part of our future. I don't think we can stick our head in the sand like an ostrich and hope they go away. We need to be able to have grown-up conversations about them. I understand that there anytime something different happens, there's some concern. Okay, but I don't know if I'd want to live next to something that has a constant humming sound. Okay, all right. But at the same time, I think I've heard people up in Toledo say that they're going to drain every last drop of water in Lake Erie. Come on. My understanding is that they take less water than your personal home. All right. So what is true? That it's going to drain every drop of water in Lake Erie, or that it's less than a flush of a toilet? It's probably somewhere in between. I just want to make sure that we're having a rational conversation about this and not engaged in hysterics. I know this. Among the conversations that we are having with one particular opportunity, the dollar amount that would come to the city of Toledo is the equivalent of a brand new Jeep plant. It would be half the size of the levy that we pay our police and fire out of. And instead of half the money that we tax ourselves in Toledo to have police and fire, if that money instead was coming from some big corporate Death Star, I'd prefer the corporate Death Star paying for our police and fire there. So I don't know. As you can see, my head's all over the place. I don't think they are pure evil. I don't think that they are the greatest thing since sliced bread. They're probably somewhere in between, and we should just try to be grown-ups about the conversations we're having about them.
Just really quickly, Lima, with our regional economic development partners, just faced these questions with the announcement of a data center coming to our region. And what we did was we started having conversations very early with those entities, as well as having very honest conversations about what is our energy capacity, what is our water capacity, and how do you grow your economy in this way to where our citizens and our ratepayers don't end up paying for it. We had a very, good attorney that we work with to look at the agreements to make sure that they were in such a way to where we could protect our ratepayers. We could be able to, from the physical build of the location, they're going to pay for infrastructure, things of that nature. But we're having very, very serious conversations about how many data centers can we sustain in our little part of the world, understanding that it's not something where we want to, this is going to be how, we grow our economy. But for us, we were excited because it represents diversification in our economy, our local economy, because traditionally we were mainly manufacturing. And so now we're moving into technology. But it's about balance. It's about having those conversations early and, making sure that you make the right decision for your individual community and region.
If I can just add two quick additional thoughts just for us to all ponder, because you're smart people that are connected and able to continue to advocate. There's two things that we're also thinking about right now, and it is, one, does our opinion change when some of these data centers are now actually generating their own electricity on site through different sources? So that's something that we're really starting to see occur. And the second is, again, if property tax goes away, they really provide very minimal income tax except during the construction phase. And then when you are being constructed, you are pulling all of that skilled talent away from other projects. And if the property tax benefit is no longer there or severely diminished with property tax reform, the overall benefit to the community is extremely impacted.
Thank you. We have just a couple of minutes left, about 3 minutes left. Let's try to get to at least one more question.
Hi, I'm Brian Williams, semi-retired freelance writer. Mayor Smith mentioned something about on housing challenges and clearing the land, and then, you know, things don't always follow through after that. I'm sure other mayors, other cities have similar problems. But very often on these projects, they tend to be larger scale and maybe, you know, an out-of-town developer. What do you think about strategies on housing where existing residents have a greater stake in it? You know, maybe working with them, training. I know Columbus has some public-private partnerships and a few things going along these lines. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that. Thanks.
It's an excellent question, and it's actually something that either, you know, by happenstance, we've really had to look at in the city of Lima is really how do you grow your own local talent pipeline to be able to rebuild your communities and the housing infrastructure. So for us, we have two trade schools in our community. They're actually high school trade schools. And so we're having conversations with those classes that they teach carpentry, they teach electrical, plumbing. You know, how do you bring those students in to work with some of our building trades to rebuild those houses? The other thing that we've been able to do is through some national partnerships that we competed for was be able to send some local developers through development training so that they can learn how to build as well. And so we're really looking to be able to capitalize on that.
We do that too, and I suspect most cities have programs like that. The challenge, the reality is, and it's not to pick on Columbus, we're jealous of Columbus, trust me. But outside of Columbus, literally, every other city in Ohio is underwater in its housing market. In other words, I know you're worried about affordability here. Two out of the last 3 years, Wall Street Journal has ranked Toledo as the most affordable city in the nation, and that's actually being damned with faint praise. That is because, so, you can have anyone you want build housing for homeless or rehab. The problem is, outside of Columbus, whatever amount you are spending to do that, you won't be able to recoup in the market. In Columbus, I suspect, you'll pay, you know, okay, I know this is going to be expensive. It's okay. In about 3 years, it's, you know, the price of this condo is going to be four times the amount, and I'll make money. In not some other cities, every other city in the state, it's the opposite. So our land bank has, you know, fixed up, so we don't have to demolish them. We'll spend $100,000 fixing up a house, and we save it from demolition. It's great. We're all happy. We find someone who lives there, and then it goes to the market for $70,000. So who wants to raise their hand to take a $30,000 hit every time we do it? Not many. Not many people want to do that, but that's the story of Ohio outside of Columbus.
And in Lima, the city's doing that work. We're taking that hit.
We can't do it. That's right.
You know, it's not sustainable, so I don't recommend it. But we're taking that hit now because we're coming from it from a perspective that if we don't bet on Lima, who will? And so we have to take the lead in rebuilding some of our neighborhoods.
I wish we had more time to continue this discussion, but since we are getting the wrap signal from Doug, we're going to turn it over now to Lauren Hagen with today's forum partner, the Columbus Metropolitan Library, for concluding remarks. Please welcome her today.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, four Ohio mayors shared the CMC stage for a historic conversation on how cities are driving the Buckeye State's growth through innovation, investment, and community leadership. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Columbus Mayor Andrew J. Genther, Findlay Mayor Christina Murren, Lima Mayor Sharetta Smith, and Toledo Mayor Wade Capsicavage. Your host was Stacia Nakien, news anchor with WBNS 10 TV. This week's forum was sponsored by The Ohio State University, the Ohio Mayors Alliance, and the Robert Weiler Company. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Silicon Heartland, Transforming the Midwest from Rust Belt to Tech Belt by Rebecca Fannin. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.